हरिः ॐ
This great secret is explained in many places in Vedic literature. The greatness of the secret is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.18. Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily, but he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him. Footnote 19. Rarely does Krishna give prema bhakti. The answer why is plain. Very few souls of this world really want him. The Lord sooner gives those who approach him for materialistic benedictions like bhukti, mukti, and siddhi than prema. The Supreme Personality of Godhead told the secret to the two great devotees, Arjuna and Uddhava, in these words. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. Bhagavad Gita 18.64, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.49. Brahma revealed the secret to Narada in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7, 51 and 52. O Narada, this science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it was spoken as the accumulation of his diverse potencies. Please explain this science yourself. Please describe the science of Godhead with determination and in a manner by which it will be quite possible for the human being to develop transcendental devotional service under the Personality of Godhead, Hari, the supersoul of every living being and the summum bonum, source of all energies. So this element, how Krishna has expanded into everything is him. At the same time, he is a person, is different. This is that supreme secret. Okay? And so that if you approach him in devotion, then he'll reveal himself, right? Through the devotees. That's how it will work. If you don't, it just won't happen. Right? Because the point is most approach him as God, you know, as the creator of the world, the maintainer, the destroyer. Right? And their purpose is not bhakti. Right? So they will not know. So that's the secret. Right? How God is in everything and everything. But the secret of all secrets is how, even though he's in everything, he's beyond it also. That's why the other day the question came up, what about the secret? You know, the secret's nice, but the point is there it's not even actually a secret because they don't know how he's entered everything. When you understand that, then the secret has meaning. Right? How Krishna's entered into everything, how his potencies make everything work. That's the secret. But the secret of all secrets is how he as a person is beyond that still. Right? He's expanded in everything as Paramatma, as a person. But he's doing that as creation. But what he wants to do as a person, how he wants to interact with the devotees based on pure love, that's the secret of all secrets.
So that's the difference between mukti and prema?
That's the difference between mukti and prema. You know, that's the difference between being able to understand the universal form and understand him as a person beyond the universal form. Right? Because otherwise the problem is that you have to know both. Otherwise we know him, but we don't know how he's entered. Or if we know how he's entered, we don't know how he's him. Because otherwise, then there's a tendency to what the weaknesses of this world is somehow or another connected to him. But that's us. That's because he's beyond. He's only done all this for us. Just like it's not that because there's a prison, then there's a fault in the administration. No, it's because there's a fault in the citizen. Therefore, there's a prison. Right? Because as far as the government would prefer is everyone would behave properly. But because they don't, therefore there's a prison. Does that make sense? So the living entities, because they turn away from the Lord and don't accept his authority, so they try to act outside of his laws. Therefore, then one is in the material world. Does that make sense? So that means that the prison, how is it constructed? By what potency?
Government.
The government, right? It's government's money, their arrangements, their managers, their engineers, everything like that, their planners. How is it maintained?
Government.
By the government. What are the laws and everything in the prison? From the government. You understand? So down to the last detail, what's the food, what's the clothes, what's the etiquette, who stands where, in which line, who eats at what table. It means all this is done by the government. You follow it, everything goes nice. You don't follow it, it's a problem. So that's the first thing to recognize, that I'm not independent. I have to follow the laws. The next thing is that there's a world beyond the prison.
Yes.
Right? So how the prison is managed by, I mean, how it's the Lord's potencies that run it, that's the secret. How there's the spiritual realm and the relationship with the Lord and his devotees beyond that, outside the prison, that's the secret of all secrets. Does that make sense? Because the one you can understand by having that surrender, that acceptance. The other, it has to be a desire for prema. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes? Anything more on this chapter? No? Okay. Okay, chapter 8. Questions by King Pratigya. Pratigya. King Pratigya inquires about the philosophical basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. The solemn purpose of Chapter 8, Questions by King Pratigya, is summed up by Srila Prabhupada in the following excerpts from His Divine Grace's purport to verse 7. Maharaj Pratigya, being a typical devotee, is not only satisfied by confirming the importance of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from the representative of Brahmaji by disciplic succession, but he is still more anxious to establish the philosophical basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, all questions that may arise in the mind of a serious student must be cleared by the statements of the authority. This inquiry is essential for immunity to all kinds of offenses on the path of devotional service. Even if one is fixed in devotional service, like Maharaj Pratigya, he still must inquire from the realized spiritual master all about this. Because Krishna being unlimited, that's why the association is important. Because every devotee has his own specific or particular view, right? Means it's based on Shastra, but because there's unlimited aspects of Krishna, one devotee will contemplate one aspect, another a different one. You know, one the sweetness, another the compassion, you know, another his surrender to the devotees. Another one is how he protects the devotees. You understand? So each devotee is going to focus on a different area. You know, someone will be deity worship, someone will be book distribution, someone will be, dealing with the devotees, serving the Vaishnavas, someone will be, you know, serving the Dham or serving the cows. You understand? So the whole point is these are different aspects of one supreme. So therefore the association, you get the benefit, even though you may not have contemplated deeply one area, then by hearing, then we get the benefit of that contemplation. Right? So it's all, that's why the association is always enriching, because then you expand the whole point. It's unlimited. So that's why Krishna can have a rasa dance with unlimited gopis. It's not a problem, because each one is connecting with a particular aspect or combination of aspects of Krishna. So it brings out a unique combination, unique flavor. But Radharani is the complete of all that. So then, according to what flavor Krishna's interested in at the moment, she will complement. Right? But and so complementing that, she will bring in specific devotees who complement that mood. And then you enhance that pastime. Right? It's already complete with her, but it becomes more complete when you when she adds the other devotees. You change Krishna's mood, so therefore a different desire. So a different endeavor, you know, different forms and endeavors to attain that desire. Then you change which devotees, but Radharani remains the constant. Does that make sense? So here is that, he confirmed the importance of Bhagavatam, but then the whole point is about further hearing. One never knows everything. One says he knows all, there's nothing more to know. Right, that then that's a problem. Like that. I mean, Krishna knows everything, and he's not sitting there with a headache or something. You know, so it's not a problem. You know, so the modern thing that the guy gets so much knowledge that his head cracks or something like that. You know, it's not a reality.
Generally, don't see it.
Huh?
We generally don't see it.
Yes.
Happening.
Yes. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 8th chapter, Parikit, revealing clearly his enthusiasm for topics about Krishna, as Sukadeva, who destroys all doubts about various topics. King Parikit begins this chapter by asking Sukadeva Goswami how, after hearing from Brahmadeva, Narad Muni went on to glorify the transcendental qualities of Krishna in his own preaching. Because he's been given the essence, because he's smart enough to understand from that essence the science. Then he's saying expand this so that people can apply this in their life, appreciate it and apply it. So we see is that here that instruction that was given by Brahmaji to Narada, Narada then gave to Vyas, and that's been expanded from four verses to 18,000.
Yes.
Right? That's so that we all the different angles we can appreciate. Right? It can be bigger, but you know, so this is good, right? You know, so why only 18,000? Because there was only 7 days. You know, so it works out.
Yes.
Because if it had been more, that would have been a problem.
Then the gods have more, right?
Yes. Like that. But it's just, you know, this is enough for us.
Yes.
You know?
That's fine.
Yeah. King Parikit begins this chapter by asking Sukadeva Goswami how after... Oh, okay, we just read that. The king remarked that hearing from Narada makes a person just as fortunate as those great saints and sages like Narada who are able to hear from Brahmadeva directly. Because this is the transparency is what is coming is as it is. So what is the point? Let us say devotee A... Then he, you know, has studied very nicely, you know, and he has a good, let's say, academic, ability. And so he's, many, many details he's remembered. And he's explaining that to devotee B. And devotee B is able to understand, you know, but he doesn't remember all those details. But the essence of that, the point is there, he explains to devotee C. Okay? Has devotee C lost out on anything?
No.
You say yes?
No.
Yes.
They say no.
And he lost details.
Details, but did he get the principle?
Yeah, well, the principle without detail is abstract.
No. Abstract is when you apply it. You apply it into your life, that's the detail. So it's not abstract anymore. See, you understand? Principle is always the primary. It's just like this. What's the most important thing in your life that you can go on and do everything nicely? Just on a, you know, just maintaining the body. What's the most important?
Teaching.
So if you don't teach, you'll die.
Yeah, I cannot get money.
Okay. So you wouldn't consider something like breathing important.
Yeah,
Yes. No, the point, if you don't breathe, then...
No. Yeah. It's my duty.
No, your duty to breathe? Or
I have to breathe.
You have to breathe. Okay, so which is more important, breathing or teaching?
Breathe.
Okay, see, everyone on the planet has a different occupation. Some of them are teachers. Is everyone on the planet breathing? Yes, so it's one common thing. You understand? So teaching's a detail, breathing's more primary. You understand? But we tend to focus on the detail, not on the principle. Why not? Because the principle is Krishna, and the detail, that's his energy. And we're interested in lording over his energy, so we don't see the importance of the detail. I mean the principle. Because in our mind, we're the principle. And in this case, then both spellings would work.
Yeah. You know.
Does that make sense?
So
that's the whole point. It's not that, oh, because it's abstract. It's only when there's detail, then it has meaning. You know? It's that you have to apply it. But the point is, what are you applying? You're applying the principle, not the detail. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the important thing. This is what we have to start to learn, to change our vision. Because otherwise, then we will take it that, you know, this elements of the secret and the secret of all secrets, these are abstract. The real practical is just, you know, if I don't work, I don't eat. You know? Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we have to be able to see beyond that. Because the point is okay, if you don't work, you don't eat. But why eat? What's the point of eating? Why do you want to eat?
Otherwise, I'd be hungry.
Okay. And so what's the problem with being hungry?
Then suffer.
Oh, okay. So then the whole point is just to not suffer. Yeah? So the bottom line is you should not suffer.
Yeah, at least.
Okay, at least. And then, are you married?
Yeah.
So why would you add that? You're already eating. You're not suffering. So it's not about not suffering. Otherwise, why would you get married?
So we're not married, so I also suffer.
You also suffer. I think it would be /without. So it's all just about... Okay. Sorry. I forgot I'm dealing with a Taoist. Okay. Yes.
All right, so we see that in the Gita, everything is given.
Yes.
And then more details are in Bhagavatam.
Yes.
And then more culture is added in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yes.
So as we study, then we can see more and more, you know...
Development.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the whole idea. Because the point is hearing about Krishna is something you go on doing eternally. The gopis are still hearing about Krishna. So they're not sitting down and reading scripture. But scripture is only there to document... and at least major important aspects of Krishna that one should be hearing about. So the gopis are already doing that without having to study the scripture. You know, it's just like if you can ride a bicycle, you don't need to go out and buy, you know, how you say, you know, how to ride a bicycle for idiots. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna is an eternal principle. So that's these five main principles always go on. The Bhagavat is always eternally there. Pancharatrik, the involvement in it due to rules and that aspect, that for us as Gaudiyas will come to an end. Because it's already included in the Bhagavat. But those in Vaikuntha, the Pancharatrik remains the prominent. Though its life is the Bhagavat. But their expression is going to still be Pancharatra. Right? So they're still going to be regulated. This time you go see the deity, you go see the Lord. this time he does this, at this time he does that. So everything's very regulated. He takes his bath, you know, the umbrella, the palanquin, everybody goes. Then he comes to that room, he gets down, he's received, he's worshipped. Then you remove all the different items from his, you know, from the previous situation. Then he has his bath and everything. Then once his bath is finished and he's dried and that, you put on the... Then he goes in his palanquin to the next room where he's dressed. He's received there, you know, everything, all the mantras and worship, and everything is removed from the previous one, and then you understand. So it's you could say the most elaborate form of Pancharatra would be Vaikuntha, like that. But for us, it's just happening. Yes, he does get up at this time and this and that, but it's not about those situations. It's about the rasa that's there, and these situations enhance that. So the majesty is not necessary to enhance the rasa. The situation means, yeah, does that make sense? So it's just a matter of whether it's sweetness or majesty which is supporting the love. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So one, the love can be it doesn't need the form of rules for expression. Its natural, spontaneous expression is actually what establishes the rules. Does that make sense? Mother Yashoda, her natural affection for Krishna, what she will do to express that from her spontaneous position, documenting that, that becomes the rules of Vaikuntha.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, both are natural. Just one, there's the desire to express through that formal form. Because then you know exactly what should happen and everything, so you can be inspired about it and focus on it. So it takes more affection to not know what's going to happen. Right? Because then you're... In other words, the majesty means there's, of course, the ultimate security is in the Lord, but then there's a security in that position as a devotee, in that the form of expression is also regular. Right? But in Vrindavan, the love is so much, it can move just as Krishna's will. That takes much more love to be able to, it may never be exactly the same, you know, twice. Does that make sense? Because in Vaikuntha, who's prominent? Narayan or Lakshmi?
Narayan.
But in Braj, who's prominent?
Radharani.
So the masculine is always stable and exactly the same. The feminine is always changing. So it takes much more surrender. That's why it's pure unalloyed devotion. Pure devotion will get you to Vaikuntha. Pure unalloyed devotion will get you to Braj. So unalloyed means there's nothing that you want. Because if you wanted something, then because it's always changing, you may or may not get. Right? Vaikuntha, you want something, it's spiritual, but you'll always get it because it's always stable. Do you see the difference? Yeah. Yes. So all the point was is that the gopi is always discussing about Krishna. That is the perfection of studying Shastra. So we're simply learning to come to that platform of always hearing and chanting about Krishna by regularly studying Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not an academic, it's not jnana yoga or something like that. It may engage our need for jnana yoga, but that's not actually the point. The point is to get us regulated at hearing and chanting about Krishna. This, our japa, you know, temple programs, the kirtans. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So you want to say something?
We only have scripture here because we're confused. It's Kali Yuga.
No, they have scripture there. They talk about it.
Yeah.
But it's just the point because there and here are non-different. So here you have all those things. There you don't. It means it's there. Because the point is they're all, the personified Vedas live in Brahmaloka. So that's who lives with Brahma. So now if you move up from there, they're not going to be there. Right? So in other words, Brahma is an expansion of Krishna's potency. So what about the personified Vedas? Those are just his breathing. Krishna doesn't breathe in Goloka. He breathes, so therefore the Veda is there.
So when we say that they were written down 5,000 years ago because of...
That means they're documented. They're written because before that they're only spoken.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
But Nanda Baba has Gita, right?
It means he speaks about Gita.
Okay.
Because it was spoken before to the sun god.
Okay.
So there it's coming down. So that for those millions of years it's coming down. But then his practical application is lost. So then Krishna's again speaking it.
Many leelas of Lord Jagannath are not recorded in Bhagavatam. So when we accept it as...
No, but they're in some other, they'll be in the Skala Puran in Jagannath Puri. So Skala Puran is one of the accepted scriptures. Stala Puran always defines how the deities worshipped and any special, unique things that have happened.
There are many leelas about Jagannath, like the king has a dream or something.
So don't worry about it.
So we can accept it as
long as it's coming from bona fide source.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But whether that's applied in our line is another thing. But it's not that we don't accept it. Is that so?
Yeah.
Okay. Prabhupada also wants Sukadeva to describe who Narada spoke this sublime knowledge to with the words, Etam Vediti Icham, I want to know. The king expresses his eagerness to learn Tattva Tattva Vidam, literally the Tattva of Tattva knowers, which means the absolute truth as he is known by learned authorities, well versed in the absolute truth. So knowing the absolute truth and then knowing the personality of Godhead, who is the absolute truth, and that's even more. Does that make sense? Yeah. Which means the absolute truth as he is known by learned authorities, well versed in the absolute truth. From verses 2 through 6, Parikit Maharaj glorifies Krishna Katha and the process of Shravana. In verses 5 and 6, he specifically declares that the means of elevation by hearing Krishna Katha purifies the heart so that the devotee experiences Sri Krishna's lotus feet therein. So that's the point, is experiencing his lotus feet. It means we hear about the 10th canto, and of course there'll be some experiences. Krishna's all attractive. So all attractive means whatever our position, he's attractive. But if the heart is purified by going through the process of step by step going through Bhagavatam, then the experience of what we'll appreciate will be even greater. So.
Can we say that experience is coming from the mind?
It may come through the mind, but it's not. It's just like, you know, is the milkshake coming from the blender?
In a sense,
yeah. So you can say, in a sense, it's coming from the mind, because the mind is the vehicle or the medium for it. Because we're dealing now, we're not working with our spiritual mind. So therefore, we work with the material mind.
So can we say that also blocks the experience?
It blocks the experience, yes. The material mind may block the experience because it has something that it considers more important. Like this opening with theirs, the detail is more important than the principle. Principles, abstract, you know. And so because it's how do you apply it, but the point is no, that's the point. Principles are supposed to be contemplated and applied. You understand? But here's... What happens is the academy doesn't do that because then you have conclusion. So what they do is that you have the abstract and then you have details. But they generally don't try to connect them, because if you connect them, then it would be you open up this whole thing that this one abstract idea can apply in so many ways. And so then it broadens the vision, you know, then because all those elements are our applications, that means this one point applies so much, so it's a very important aspect. Then you kind of lose out on the modern concept of how you say, academic method, in that you're the speculative aspect, the pleasure you get from that, is the real gain. Right? Because for most teachers, what they get paid is not the real gain. Right? Because, you know, he mentioned here, you know, if he doesn't work, he doesn't eat. You know? Now, this businessman, does he say, if I don't work, I don't eat? No, if I don't work, then, you know, then it's hard to maintain my, you know, my yacht in the, you know, Caribbean. Like that. So there's a slight difference like that, you know. So the point is that the real return for the academic is the taste from the speculation. So that blocks the taste from actual appreciating the principle. And then beyond that, who's the source of that principle? So in other words, there's a principle of everything. All philosophy has its principles, going back to a primary principle. Right? But now, who's the source of that principle? That's the secret of all secrets. So that's not dealt with. So you can get just as much taste, but now it's coming on the spiritual platform. But the problem is the mind blocks, because we think that, okay, this is very nice and all this, but then, you know, so many things have to be done. Other things have to be done. So then the mind will distract, because it can only do one thing at a time. You know what I'm saying? It may have a group of things it can put together, right? But it'll only focus on one thing at a time. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're cooking and talking on the phone, which is prominent. The phone, yeah. Because it's by habit. In other words, you have to be good enough at cooking that you can cook by habit and talk on the phone at the same time. Right? And then you add in the kids also sitting there in the kitchen. Right? So that's because of habit. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then when the girls grow up, you know, dealing with the younger, you know, the kids in the, you know, greater family and learning cooking, then when they're older, they have their own cook kid, then they can deal with the kid cook and talk on the phone at the same time. Right? And at the same time be disciplining the husband by not talking to him because of what he did, you know, like that. So I mean, all these things that are going on at once. But now you can imagine if they've never touched a baby and never touched, you know, a spoon other than pushing, you know, 2 minutes on the microwave, you know, then suddenly they have a kid and cooking and all this, and the husband walks in, then, you know, they're at a loss, they're freaking out. So that's why the Vedas recommend, because the feminine nature is multitasking, so therefore multitasking requires practice, because the mind will only deal with one of them at a time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right, so then the process is the same for everybody, for residents of Golok, and then for Uttama Madhyam and Kanishtha Adhikaris here in the chanting.
So it's the same.
Actual experience is very different,
yes,
because of this point of the mind, because yes, it's not focused.
Yes. That's why that Krishna makes that point in the Gita about the mind, you know, being like the chariot of the mind, just riding around and going, you know, here and there and trying different things. So when it's focused on Krishna, then it will work, because it's, you get the most experience of focusing. Like, if you're not focused, you don't get an experience. So let us say that there's there was a moment, right? So what does that mean, there was a moment? What happened at that moment? An experience, but why did that experience happen? Because there was full focus and attention at that point. So then there's a moment. So people, you know, base their life on these moments, good or bad. You know, if they have ideals, it's because there's moments of that. If there's, you know, neurosis, it's because of bad moments. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so the point is we're talking about on the platform, at least, when you get to the point of samadhi, in Bhav Sadhana, that those moments, it's constant. There is no such thing as anything other than the present moment. So that intensity then is great, so that matures into prema. Right? Then it becomes even better. Right? Yes.
But then the question comes, because mind is unsteady by nature.
Right.
So how will we develop this?
Because you're transferring it from the unlimited things of this world that are actually Krishna, that we don't see in connection with Krishna, to being focused on Krishna, who has unlimited qualities, so the mind can keep moving around all these aspects. It's not a problem. So in other words, we're not changing what we do at all. What we're changing is where we're applying what we do. But because we think that it can only be done in this way, we have to say, this is wrong. Right? So therefore we say attachment is bad. You have to give up attachment. You have to give up desire. But in reality, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to transfer that attachment and desire to Krishna. But because we're so fixed, the desire means, you know, things of this world. Right? So therefore we have to say this is wrong. Then we pull back from it. But at the same time, we have to be saying that this is right, what's in the spiritual world, so that we start to focus the attention there. Because the mind has to go somewhere. So when the mind is actually fed up with dealing with what's here, it can transfer it to there. Right? Otherwise, if you don't have that option, then generally people start looking for around for, you know, bridges or very tall buildings. Right? So that's the whole point, is you have to switch. Because that's the nature. Because what's the point of the criminal? Is the problem that the criminal was trying to better his facility? No. It's that he's doing it by illegal means rather than by legal means. You know, is it a problem that, you know, he has close friends and he worked closely with them and they had good teamwork? Right? That's not the problem. The problem is that all that friendship and teamwork was used for illegal activities. Right? Is it a problem he was breathing? No, you know, what about eating? Right? You know, so everything remains. All it is that you have to transfer it from doing what a proper citizen does, I mean, from what a criminal does to what a, you know, standard citizen does. That's the whole point. So, in other words, one becomes a citizen of the spiritual world when one gives up the mentality of a citizen of the material. So it's very natural. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that we learn the activities of the spiritual world through sadhana. That's why sadhana and all these aspects are there. Right? It's just like, why do we wear these, you know, devotional clothes? Is it because it's just, you know, it's just that somehow or another the cloth is better or something, or in many cases it is better, but, you know, other than that,
it's more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like this. As a materialist, a Western materialist, how many people wear silk?
Not many.
Very few. Might have a silk tie, you know, if you were going to spend the bucks, or, you know, very rare would they ever have a silk shirt.
Yeah.
You know, and how many people wear cravats these days? You know, you don't even hear about those guys. They're in their own universe. Like that. Women will have a little bit more silk. I mean, here, everything you're wearing, top to bottom, silk. Like that. You know, so that's another thing, but we're not getting into that. The main point is, it's not that that's what makes devotional service. It's that you're identifying with the residents of the spiritual world and doing what they do. You understand? Technically, it's remembering Krishna. It's not about what externally is done. But the problem is because we identify with the external, therefore, by adjusting the external to what they do in the spiritual world, then that makes everything work so much nicely here.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's why we do it.
Side effect.
Yeah. It means we avoid immorality, because immorality means it's not connected to Krishna.
Yes.
Right? But we also avoid piety that's not connected to Krishna. So neither are we interested in morality or immorality. We're only interested in service to Krishna.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So So therefore, we want to please Krishna. How do you please Krishna? Well, you do it through pure love. If you don't have pure love, then you have to practice the activities that support pure love, that are in pursuance of pure love. It's not that the activity generates the pure love. The activity generates Krishna's mercy by which you develop the pure love. So therefore, the documentation of the activities of the spiritual world is given in Shastra. So it's not that we just connect anything we like. I mean, from the beginning one may do that. But you connect what's recommended, because this is how they do it in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? That's the idea.
So this whole thing that we can offer anything to Krishna, that's impersonalism.
You can offer anything to Krishna, yes, but what's the point of offering it to Krishna? What's the intent?
I like it.
I like it, but then, so that means it's mixed. It's that this is what I have, then that's pure devotion.
But when it becomes, the argument becomes that Krishna is everything, so we can...
Yes, he is everything, but the point is then this is what, that's the secret. But then the secret of all secrets is, and he's a person beyond that. So as a person, he likes the Shukta Shakadi Bhaji Naleta Kushmanda. He likes that.
Yeah.
He likes to sit in a line and eat. He likes to wash his hands, mouth, and feet before and after eating. That's what he likes as a person.
Yeah.
You know? But my point is if we can offer anything to Krishna, why is it always within the Malecha, the middle-class Malecha Western society? Why it's always that? Exclusively. It's not the poor person. It's not the rich person. It's always the middle class. And it should be leaning to the left.
Yeah.
And how is that everything? That's very specific, very narrow, very xenophobic. That's clarity. That's transparency. That they're just as xenophobic and just as narrow-minded as every other one else on the planet. So the only way to get universal is to actually connect everything through the philosophy, through what's recommended, what the acharyas do. Then it develops the universality. That's what everybody on the planet can do. Because everybody does not want to be an American. In fact, most people that are not American don't want to be Americans. And a lot of Americans don't even like being Americans. You know, so that is not universal in any way, shape, or form. So to take that as your standard ideal, that American is universal, you know.
So the benefit of Bhagavatam over Vedanta Sutra is that also we get all these details so we can...
You get the culture in that. Means, in other words, the philosophy is there, but then you have to apply it into the life. So that takes more thinking. If I already have an example, then that's why Bhagavatam is more important. And then specific example is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how we deal with this. Yes?
Maharaj, going back to the previous point of the mind... So it seems in our philosophy that this shift of the mind needs a lot of monitoring and siksha and
yes.
care, because it's not just automatically. It has a lot of time.
It has its automatic aspect if one can do that. In other words, because it's the nature of the soul to be like that, one can surrender and in a moment come to that platform. That's why there's examples of it. But if that's not so, that's the recommendation. If you can't do that, then you follow the sadhana. Right? And then that sadhana is then supported by the Vedic. And then if you can't do that, then be a nice guy. In other words, being a philanthropist is, if you can't follow Pancharatra, you don't have the qualifications to follow Pancharatra or the Vedic, then you can be a philanthropist. And if you can't do that, then you can be a Mayavadi. So, in that way, at least then it's better than being a Mayavadi.
So, I mean, in the level of sadhana bhakti,
yes.
which most of us are practicing, it seems that the siksha, how to do specific things, is very important.
Yes.
To connect the.
It's the detail of it is not as important. That's what we were getting through to this point here, and then we got distracted. Is that, you know, we were saying about devotee A, who absorbed many of the details. Explains it to devotee B. Devotee B catches the principle of it and a few of the details. He explains it to C, you know, those few details. Now let's say, so devotee C hasn't lost anything, because here transparency means the actual understanding of what's pure devotion, not the amount of facts. Modern transparency means facts. I don't know facts. Facts are hidden. It's not transparent. There's a cover-up. But in reality, that's not transparency. Transparency means that its connection to Krishna is transparent. Because how many facts can one know anyway? How do you know what facts the other person wants to know? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? I've seen people look at books. I'm not joking. They look at the page, all these numbers, the whole page. They can just look at it, look down at the bottom, go, okay, everything's fine. And that quick. I'm not joking. And then others, if you don't get it out, and guys are sitting there and looking at it and comparing and this and talking and phoning and emailing, they can't understand it. So how much is facts? How much is transparency? You know, transparency is dependent upon the quality, qualification of who you're dealing with.
Does that word transparent mean reflecting Krishna?
No, transparency means like a glass window. It's very clean, you can see what's on the other side. So they're talking about transparency means mundane facts. But for us, transparency means you can see the mood of the parampara all the way back to Krishna. That's real transparency. This other thing is a smokescreen. It's a smokescreen to cover up mundane vision. Sounds good, but it's not pure devotion. It has to be checked. It has to be there. Everything's because it's all Krishna. So we're checking because it's Krishna's, not because there's something morally wrong. That's the difference. The transparency means because we want to avoid anything immoral, that's a mundaner. If it's transparency because we want to see everything in connection to Krishna, we want to avoid anything that's not pure devotion, then that's what Rupa Goswami is recommending. So we see, it's not the form of what you're doing, it's the intent and the consciousness in which one's doing it. That's the real transparency. But it's now made out to be what activity you do is transparency. No, it's what's the mentality that's transparency. Right? And so if that's practiced for long enough, then the form follows the subtle. Right? So then externally, then that will all work nicely also. But to focus just on the external without changing the consciousness, then basically is just another waste of time.
Okay, so right now we are on the Bhagavatam class, we are discussing this part of the Bhagavatam, which is the nature of the forest of material enjoyment.
Yes.
Right? So many speakers have spoken about the difficulty of getting rid of the sex desire, which is the point. So my question is in that sense, that the mind is here and there attached to the externals,
yes.
Right? So you need one speaker brought up that actually we do need guidance on celibacy to actually be able to do it nicely.
Yes.
So his point was we have little of that in our society. I mean, discussing principles.
We have little because is it valued? Is celibacy valued? Is celibacy valued or is not being immoral valued? Yeah, so what does that got to do with technically? How does that fuel celibacy?
It just puts more gasoline.
Yeah, so the point is that not being immoral is great, but you're not immoral because of celibacy. So how does celibacy work? There's no focus there. The focus is on how we can avoid, how to make rules that there'll be less immorality. Is there any rules how to be more celibate? You've heard one in one meeting?
In this class, the person was...
That's in a class. I'm talking about a management meeting. Okay, so then that's the point. So then they're focusing on the wrong place. You know, it's just like... the guy's got the tire is bald, okay? And they're going down the highway and they hit a sharp rock, they get a flat. Okay, so now, what are they going to discuss in this management meeting now? How to remove all sharp rocks from the road. They're not going to discuss that people have to, change the tires before they get bald. Or the quality of the company's got to make tires that don't go bald quickly, that are stronger. You understand? And along with that, keep the road clean. You understand?
Yeah.
This is the problem. The celibacy, it's not valued. Because the point is celibacy means, what does celibacy mean?
It means that you focus your energy with Krishna.
Yes, so that's the point. So brahmacharis, grihastha, everybody's celibate. It's just a matter of what's the medium of celibacy. Brahmacharis don't engage the senses, grihasthas do, but it still has to be celibacy. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is without training, yes, it's true, without training and that, it's not going to work. So that's what has to be seen, but it's a matter of switching it to Krishna. It means there isn't something here.
Yes.
You know, I'm saying it's just like, kids eat mud or they eat styrofoam or like that. So now, how do we get them to stop eating mud?
Giving something like more tasty.
Yes, giving something nicer to eat. Do we get them to stop eating mud and then they get nothing to eat? So then what are they going to do when they get real hungry? Go back to eating mud. So that's the thing, if you don't switch this, but that means that pure devotional service is about Krishna developing relationship with him. But there's also a phobia of this actually liking hearing about Krishna. Because spontaneous devotional service, is one of those things you don't talk about, along with varnashram. So in other words, all the things that create the taste and move one on, those are all the phobias. Why? Because the Malecha and Yavana culture doesn't have any of that. And so it's foreign. So there's an immediate anxiety about that. So one has to study to know why this is good and explain why that's good, rather than try to skirt around it and try to, make excuses for how Prabhupada was too strong in this place and that. You could have said it like this, and that's not really so important. That's not transparent at all. That's extremely cloudy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the mode of ignorance. Is what's real is always taken as the opposite. From verses 7 to 22, the king asks a series of questions that anticipate the philosophical basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, footnote 20. That basis is laid down in chapter 9 as the Chatushloki Bhagavata, or Chatushloki Bhagavata, and in chapter 10 is the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavata. How his questions anticipate the 10 subjects is shown in the next section of the study guide. In verse 23, Maharaj Pariket summarizes the position of the Supreme Lord with regards to his internal and external potencies. From verses 24 to 26, he glorifies the hearing process and his Gurudev, Srila Sukadev Goswami. The latter prepared himself to reply, as Sudha Goswami describes in verses 27 to 29. Chapter 8 summarizes questions and answers. Questions 35 through 41 of Srimad Bhagavatam are asked by Maharaj Pariket of Sukadev Goswami. For the purposes of the study guide, the many questions of King Pariket are organized as aspects of the following 7 questions. How portions of these questions anticipate the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam is noted. This is important because in his reply to Pariket's question, Sukadeva will introduce the 10 subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam in verses 2:10, 1-9. Question 35. Please instruct me about the teachings of Narad Muni. How did Narad Muni, whose hearers are as fortunate as those instructed by Lord Brahma, explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is without material qualities, and before whom did he speak? Okay. Yeah, so now, because remember, Narad Muni heard the instructions, And then Brahma said to expand that. So he's now asking, how did he expand it? How did he explain that? How did he expand it in his explanation? Tell me about the activities of the different... Question 36. Please instruct me about the personality of Godhead. I wish to know the difference between the Lord's universal body and the bodies of the living entities. Text 8, footnote 21. Sridhar Swami comments on this verse in the following words. In the 8th chapter of this canto, Maharaj Pariksit asks, if the Supreme Lord has a material body, then how is it that the devotees become liberated by simply serving and worshipping the material body of the Supreme Lord? Maharaj Pariksit also asks if there was any difference between the Lord's body and the bodies of the conditioned souls. I wish to know about the super soul in the hearts of all living beings, who is the Lord of all cosmic energies, yet who is untouched by them. Tell me about the activities of the different incarnations of the Lord in the different ages. Footnote 22. The 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. The creation of the universe, sub-creation, right, that means the, Brahma's creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, creative impetus, the change of Manus, the science of God, returning back home, back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum. Subject matter 7 of the Bhagavatam is Ishanukatha, the science of God, or scriptural information regarding the personality of Godhead, his incarnations on earth and the activities of his devotees. The answers to questions 35 and 36 are to be found in this category of Bhagavat Tattva. A little bit. It's just being commented on. But now the topics will come up in the 10th chapter. And so then there'll be more. Because in this conversation, you're always going to be discussing things, just like we were discussing before. Because a point was being made about how, you know, the parampara works. So it's a matter of you hear the essence, then you pass that on to the next person according to your ability. And so they hearing the essence. So devotee C might also have a good academic ability, right? But he's only heard some detail, though he's heard the principle. Now in his contemplation, he understands more ways to apply it. So when he explains it to devotee D, then he gives so much more detail. You know what I'm saying? Because when you have the principle, you can always expand. If you only have detail, then very few can take detail and do something with it. Like that. So it's rare in this world that you find people like that. But they are. They write books. Right?
This term here, Bhagavat Tattva, in this context, is it referring to the 10 categories, the 10 topics?
The 10 topics, meaning where Bhagavat Tattva in?
In this footnote, it said the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam.
No, I think in Bhagavatam Ishanukatha.
This category of
Bhagavatam. Because that's Bhagavatam. Right there. Because Ishanukatha is the science of Godhead, then that's all about everything, about him, his how he expands into everything. You know, in other words, the whole element of how he is everything. You know, so him, his energies, the jivas, the material world, so chit achit ishwar, that whole aspect. So now, interesting to note in this, where he's asked in question 36, he wants to know, the universal form in the bodies of the living entities. So you're dealing with the Brahman aspect. I wish to know about the super soul, right? Who are the Lord of the cosmic energies, who's managing all these energies and all that. Then tell me about the activities of the incarnations of the Lord. So Brahman Paramatma Bhargava. Right? So it's complete. Question 37. Please instruct me about the individual living entities. Does the spirit soul acquire his body accidentally, or is there a cause? You're just walking down the street and then suddenly you have this body. And, hey, where did this come from? Right? 7. Please describe the character and activities of great souls and the characteristics of the castes and orders of social life. Right. So now you have the body. So having that body, how do the great souls apply it, and what are the characteristics of the castes and orders of social life? Because that is governs the duties of that particular body. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So the point is the body is created by the modes of nature. You know? And then the Varnashram regulates it. So that's like saying is that I get a machine, right? And it comes with a manual. And then I say, you know, I look at the manual and, you know, it was, you know, published 9 months ago. So this is archaic, so it doesn't apply to this machine now. You understand? So that's how much logic is there saying that the Vedic literatures don't apply to my life today. Because it's still the one creation. And you can say, no, but it's been so long. We're halfway through, you know, an outward breath. So, you know, 3/4 of a second is in and out. Right? So that means then you have 6/8. So then 3/8, and then divide. So 1.5/8 of a second is how much time has gone by. And we're saying, it's been so long, it's archaic. Yes.
Mark, huh. A related point. The Vedas come from the Lord's breathing, and our whole creation exists while he's breathing out, then they're also manifest with it.
Yeah, through the Veda.
The breathing.
So that's the whole thing, is it all this applies. So that's the point, is that we've acquired a body, so how did it happen? And then the Varnashram regulates what that body is, how it's engaged, and then how did the great personalities engage themselves? Right? Because they have a body, and they're following the Varnashram system. Please tell how the living entities are generated, how they are maintained, and how they are annihilated. Okay, so this is how it goes on. The other one is it happen by accident, or is there a cause? So in other words, this concept of chance has already been brought up. Mm-hmm. So if we want to talk about archaic, then asking, you know, that everything goes by chance, that's a 5,000-year-old theory. Time to move on, you know, come on. Okay, merged in the body of the Lord after annihilation, how again are they created? How do the atheists appear in this world? How do souls who are unconditioned exist? Right, so then this is all the theistic elements of how it's going on. And then how do atheists come about? And then how do those who are beyond? Right, so then there's the general living entity. Then there's within the material world, there's the atheists within the material world. Then there's those who are beyond the material world. Right? So in other words, the unfortunate, the fortunate, and the yes. How you say, and the liberated souls. Mm. Like that.
Yes.
Like that. Okay, footnote 23. Regarding the first sub-question, verse 7 of this chapter, subject matter 2 of the Bhagavatam is Visarga, the secondary creation, or the work of Brahma in producing the moving and non-moving bodies in the universe. Regarding the second sub-question, 16, the part about the characteristics, character and activities of great souls falls under Ishanakata again. The part about the characteristics, because the great souls, that falls within the category of the Lord. So what the great souls do, that's within the category of the Lord. What the non-great souls do, then that's not even worth discussing,
no.
Let alone starting a movement. Right? Okay. The part about the characteristics of living entities in different castes and orders falls under Manvantara, right? Because Manu controls that.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth subject matter, which includes the regulative principles for living entities who desire to achieve perfection in human life. The rules of Manu, as described in Manu Samhita, present these regulative principles. Okay. Do we catch how it is? Is how all these... how all these topics fit under the 10.
Mm-hmm.
How all these questions, because his point was is that these questions that he's asking now, that'll give rise to the Chakra Shloki, discussion of the Chakra Shloki, and the 10 subjects. Because his questions, that, you know, that's the perfect answer to his questions.
Yes. Where is this coming from, this footnote?
I would expect this is all Sahutamar.
Oh, okay.
Because the first and second canto are Sahotamarsa's work, but the second canto was more developed because that's where we started adding in all the techniques that we wanted to use.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was going to go back, redo the first like that, then continue with the third. But, you know, it didn't happen. So then you see this more of his comments there. So the structure of it will be how the compilers will put it together. But all these extra comments, that would be from knowledge. Regarding the third sub-question, 21, how the living entities are generated, comes under Visarga again. Right? Because Sarga is the universal form. Right? Visarga is how the bodies of the living entities are created. And then the Varnashram, that comes under Manu, because that's his area of control. How they are maintained, that's how they're created, is that. How they are maintained comes under Sthana, or the maintenance of the universe, by the personality Godhead. And how they are annihilated comes under Nirodha, the eighth subject matter. The winding up of all energies employed in creation. Regarding the fourth sub-question, 22, the part concerning the revival of the living entities, even after their annihilation at the end of the cosmic manifestation, belongs to subject matter 5, Uti, the urge for creation, or the initiative power. Right? Because you have creation, but why is there creation? Right? Because you have the activity, but then you always have the what is it? Accusative, right? No. Ablative, which is the source, the reason for it. Right? Just like you have the activity that generates a result, but it also has a place that it's done and a cause of why it's done. Does that make sense? So he's just asking all these, because we would say it's the same question, but it actually technically is different. The part about the appearance of atheists falls under Visarga again. The part about the unconditioned souls is the ninth subject matter, mukti, or liberation of the conditioned souls and cage by the gross and subtle covering of the body and mind. Okay. Question 38. Please instruct me about material nature. What is the actual position of the planetary systems within the jagainic body of the Virat Purush? 11. Please describe how the creation of the globes throughout the universe, the four directions of the heavens, the sky, the planets, the stars, the mountains, the rivers, the seas, and the islands, as well as their different kinds of inhabitants, takes place. Because, in other words, an island is a small continent, but when it's an island, it doesn't have connection to other things, then it takes on a different nature. Mm-hmm. It has a uniqueness to it. You know, like, you know, the, how you say, what is it called? Galapagos? You know, you have those big monster turtles. You don't really find those in other places, you know, or Australia. Even though it's a continent, it's a very big island. And so it has a uniqueness that you don't find in other places.
Yeah.
You know.
People generally go a little bit crazy on islands.
Yes. Oh, that explains it. Okay. Yeah, okay. That. Okay.
In the commentaries of the Acharyas in the fifth canto, it said dvipa means... Dwi, two part drinks water from two sides.
Both sides. Okay.
Ireland.
Oh, that's so that explains Ireland.
Yeah, they've got a drink in both hands.
A drink on both sides. We're island people. We have two drinks. We're island people. Isn't that obvious? Okay. Yeah, so here he's asked about all the different kinds of situations that there are. Mm-hmm. And because what's happening is you've got rivers, the mountains, all these are all different. They give different flavor. Like you always see wherever the place is, if you have a country, then the people in the plains will have one mood, the people in the mountains will have another mood. But if you compare them, the people in the mountains of each country basically have a similar flavor, and the people in the plains have a similar flavor. So there's an effect of these things. You know, birds act one way. They spend their time in the sky. They're very different from other living entities. You know, so like this, each one has its uniqueness. Okay, 15. Please tell me about the inner and outer space of the universe in specific divisions. 16. Kindly explain all about the elementary principles of creation, the number of such elementary principles, the cause and their development. 19. Footnote 24. The first three sub-questions, 11, 15, 16, follow under Visarga, right? Because it was all about what all the different aspects of the creation. The last, 19, falls under the first subject matter of Bhagavatam Sarga, or the creation done by Vishnu, right? Because the elementary principles of creation, which the Lord brings forth, the five gross material elements, the five objects of sense perception, the 10 senses, the mind, intelligence, false ego, and the total material energy, or universal form. Right? Because then you could say it's here, he's bringing out the total, the, or the total material energy, the universal form. Because the elements of themselves are separated, but what are you going to do with separated elements? Yeah, but how can you combine them? They themselves don't have the potency to combine, right? They've only separated because of the glance of the Lord. So now how are they going to come together to combine to make everything in this world? That's going to be the Lord's potency, his attractive principle. You know, or otherwise known by the scientists, I guess, as gravity. Right? You know, so that attractiveness of the Lord. So then you can put them all together, and whatever there is within, going to be within the universe. That's the universal form. Yes. Therefore, the total material energy in the universal form.
Yes.
Makes sense. Okay. Question 39. Please instruct me about time. What is the duration of time between creation and annihilation, and that of other subsidiary creations? What is the nature of time, indicated by the sound of past, present, and future? A new twist. The sound of time past, the sound of time present, and the sound of time future. Okay. Please explain the duration and measurement of life of the different living beings known as the demigods, the human beings, etc., in different planets of the universe. Please also explain the cause of the different durations of time, both short and long, as well as the beginning of time, following the course of action. 13. Please explain all the different ages and the duration of the creation, and also the duration of such ages. 17. Footnote 25. The cycles of time and the lifespan of living entities in the different creation are covered by Sarga, Visarga, Stana, Nirodha, and Manvantara. So then all of these, in other words, time being the active principle, then is explained in everything. Yeah. Right? So then your primary creation, secondary, your maintenance, your destruction, and then how the Manvantaras manage everything.
Nature of time indicated by the sound of past. Is that meaning indicated by the terminology, past, present, future?
That it could also be that the sound, because action starts from. It means you have the primordial sound, and then it moves, then it manifests. So it may be that there's some element by sound, right? You know, so therefore there may not. There may be some scientific basis in the beginning. There was the word, you know. So then. It's a sound, is the thing, but they don't. These things get lost. The detail gets lost.
This M theory they're working on now is based on frequency as being the basis of every existing thing.
Okay. Maybe they see everything has a frequency.
Maybe they've caught on to something. I don't know.
So they have a box that defines mother-in-law frequency or something.
That would probably be one of the first things they had to work on. I don't know.
Teenage kids think that when the mom's coming, you know?
Yeah.
Describe, okay. Question 40. Please instruct me about karma. Describe how the proportionate accumulation of the reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act upon the desiring living being. Promoting or degrading him among the different species of life, beginning from demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. Notice here, the desiring living entity, because karma doesn't act on the non-desiring living entity.
Yes.
Right? Someone who's liberated, karma doesn't act.
Yes.
Because it may act with the modes of nature, but does it affect the living entity?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really bother you. Right?
Yes.
So, yeah. So that explained how the body still has things happening to it, but it doesn't affect the person in the body. But if we're affected by the body, then these things disturb us. Footnote 26. This is covered in Stana and Manvantara. Okay. So karma is under Stana, because you're maintaining the universe. That's what maintenance means, is actually just giving all the living entities their karma. And then why they're getting what they're doing, and what promotes them or degrades them, then that's Manvantara. Because that's your Varnashram system. What you do elevates you or degrades you. Question 41. Please instruct me about Dharma, religious principles. In general, what are the common religious affiliations of human society? What are the specific occupational duties in religion? How are the social orders as well as the administrative royal orders classified? What are the religious principles for one who may be in distress? Because there's what you do and then there's a distress when you can't do what is normal. Emergency. 18. What are the opulences of the great mystics and what is their ultimate realization? How does the perfect mystic become detached from the subtle astral body? Right, so we're talking, people are interested in the astral body, you know, and astral travel and all that, but here it's the mystic yogi, how does he become detached from that? So that's the actual advanced system of yoga. It's not about, you know, astral travel, it's about how to get beyond that. Yes.
So does that refer to the linga sharir or the karma sharir?
Well, you're getting rid of the linga sharir. But the point is your karma sharir remains. That you don't know. So we know about that. So then that's two beyond. So when people are talking about astral travel, we're all discussing two levels beyond that.
Yes. Maharaj, sharira, what is the translation of the word? Sharira?
Sharira.
Body.
Generally means the body, but Manu gives a specific, that's why it's discussed there. Manu gave a very specific what the word means. When he's dealing with how the that primary and secondary creation happen, then they give the sharir. But I think it has something to do with entering into the body.
The elements enter.
Like that. So when they enter, so it means according to your mentality, then those particular elements enter, right? And then that creates the. That's what you deal with.
What is the basic knowledge of the Vedic literatures, including the branches of history and the supplementary Puranas? Please tell me also of the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service unto the Lord. What are the Vedic rituals and injunctions of the supplementary Vedic rites? And what are the procedures of religion, economic development, and sense gratification? Footnote 27. Also, advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service. So advantages, you go back to Godhead. Disadvantages, if you don't do it, you stay here. It's not that there's any disadvantage in performing devotional service. Of course, unless you take that element that Rupa Goswami points out, if you're really attached to family and money and social position, then don't go look at Krishna down at the bank of the Jamuna in his threefold bending form, because then you'll lose interest. Right? So that's a disadvantage.
I mean, that's usually what we see also, right? No lust.
That's a disadvantage.
What's the point?
That's a disadvantage, Okay, footnote 27. The first subsection, 18, comes under Manvantara, because how does religion work, the social orders? Regarding the second, 20, right, about the great mystics. The parts about the mystics comes under Mukti, right? How do they liberate themselves? The last part about the basic knowledge of the Vedic scriptures comes under Manvantara, Ishanu, Katha, and Ashraya, the 10th subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that was about branches of history and everything like that. Ashraya is the transcendence, the summum bonum, from whom everything emanates. Right? So, because in the Puranas, then it's the discussion is actually about the Lord's incarnations and then everybody connected to them. Mm-hmm. So the primary creation, the Lord's involvement, then his expansions as the Lords of the secondary creation, how that happens, then expanding further into the human society, then through the Manvantaras,
like that, then how that's applied by the great kings and dynasties. Right? So this is then how it will all be. So it's all about the Lord. So he is the summum bonum, upon whom everything rests and in whom everything merges after annihilation. So you have what is the destruction, but then where does it go? It goes back to the summum bonum. Right? It means there is creation. So what is the creative impetus? Right? There's the desire for that, but who has it? The summum bonum. Right? Does that make sense? So all the primary creation, all that energies, the separation of those, and then how does that happen? It's by the energies of the Lord. But he's the shelter of all like that. Yeah. He is the source and support of all. The Ashraya is also called the Supreme Brahman, as in the Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, Janmadyasya Yataha. Srimad Bhagavatam especially describes the Supreme Brahman as the Ashraya. Sri Krishna is the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, this Ashraya can be no one else but Sri Krishna. It means, in other words, everything's Brahman. So that's what, when we discuss about Brahman, then the impersonalists will think about just the impersonal aspect of Brahman. But we understand, no, the Supreme Brahman, who's the source of all other Brahmans. Right? So the point is that Jiva Brahman comes from Krishna, external energy Brahman comes from Krishna, internal potency Brahman comes from Krishna, and the Brahma Jyoti comes from Krishna. Right? So, yeah. And even, yes.
We used to tell that this is the pastimes of the Lord.
No. I think so.
So that's the
meaning? Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like that. But it will be about all aspects. So it's not just Leela avatars. It'll also include Manvanta avatars, you know, the Guna avatars. So it's all the avatars.
Whatever is connected to the Lord.
Yes, everything is connected to the Lord. So therefore, then within that, you'll get all these other aspects. So technical aspects will come in primary and secondary creation. Technically, everything is about the Lord. You know, it's all about the Lord. But it's bringing out different aspects of that. Like summum bonum means the Lord. But it's about him as the source of all these other aspects. Does that make sense? So then when you get into the detail, then even though it's about the creative element, then it goes into its own topic. So you have the overall, and then you have their technique, you know, you could say in one sense subtopics. But at the same time, as they're so great, they stand on their own. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, so what is Saguna Brahman? What is Nirguna Brahman?
Saguna Brahman is what Brahman is. Nirguna Brahman is an illusory concept of the Mayavadis and Buddhists.
So actually, there's only Saguna
Brahman. There is only Saguna Brahman. Nirguna Brahman is a concept like for the materialist he's going to enjoy in the material world. Mm. It's an illusion. So Nirguna Brahman is also an illusion of the Buddhists and the Mayavadis in that they think, I am going to enjoy by not having the illusion of the material world. Right? And then there'll be nothing. But the point is what you see here, this is all Brahman. The Saguna Brahman, this is all expanding from Saguna Brahman.
So what is the difference between Saguna Brahma and the Brahma?
Saguna Brahman is one aspect of Brahman. Then you have the external energy Brahman, you have the internal energy Brahman, you have the Jiva Brahman. And then you have the Supreme Brahman, who's the source of all. Because, in other words, everything is transcendental. It's all Krishna. So illusion is that we think it's not Krishna. That's what the material world is. But it's made out of the inferior Brahman. That's why it's not interesting to us, because it's inferior Brahman. We're superior Brahman. But we're small superior Brahman. Does that make sense? So that's why the Nirguna Brahman won't bring any satisfaction to the living entity because there's no consciousness there and there's no consciousness here. So all we're doing is saying, I have this whole pile of unconscious matter and so I will switch that for unconscious, you know, vacuum. How does that help? Right? What's the problem in that? You're there, you know, how you say, after, you know, the Holocaust and all that, and then, you know, everything seems to be peaceful, you've left it a few days, then you come out of your bomb shelter and you come up to the surface of the earth, and there's nothing there, not any movement, no life, no nothing. What's the problem? It means tons of stuff is there. What's the problem? Why do you feel alone? You don't feel alone.
Because nobody
is there. There's no bodies. That means there's no conscious entities there. Bodies are there. Plenty of that. What's the problem? Because there's no consciousness. So by getting rid of conscious, by substituting lack of consciousness in dead matter with lack of consciousness in you know, non-dead matter, it doesn't solve anything. You have to substitute with conscious, you know, matter, right? So that's the spiritual energy. So we can only be happy in contact with the Lord and his internal potency, because then you have people who are conscious, right? Because the material world, then it's unconscious. That's why there's no satisfaction. So even though we're interacting, but there's no real consciousness of the Lord, therefore there's no satisfaction. So only in the community of devotees, then you can actually start to get an understanding. Does that make sense? Okay. Regarding the third sub-question, 21, the part about the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service comes under poshana, the fourth subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because poshana is nourishing the devotees, which means it's based on devotional service. Poshana is the special care and protection the Lord extends to his devotees. Right? What he extends equally to all living entities, that's sthana. But what he extends specially for the devotees, that's poshana. To materialize poshana may appear to be disadvantageous, as when the Lord takes away a devotee's opulence. But a devotee knows that the Lord always has the best interests of his servants in his heart. The rest of the third sub-question comes under manvantara. Okay, it means about what are the Vedic rituals and injunctions to the supplementary Vedic rites, the procedures of religion, economic development, sense gratification. So that's all manvantara. Right, so then you have liberation. So dharma, artha, kama come under manvantara. Moksha then comes under liberation, mukti. Okay, answers to question 35 through 41. Question 35 is briefly answered in 2nd Canto, chapter 9, verses 40 to 45. Answers to question 36 to 41 is given in chapters 9 and 10, the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, 2, 9, 33 through 36, forms the essential answer to all questions. Sukadeva Goswami continues to speak on the subjects raised by Maharaj Prakrit in the 2nd Canto, chapter 8, up to the end of the Bhagavatam. So then you've established the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, and then by his questions, and then the whole rest of the Bhagavatam describes that. Mm-hmm. So we see is that the first canto establishes that there's going to be a discussion. Yes. And in that discussion, you know, beginning with the second canto, you establish the philosophical fundaments of the whole discussion and the actual topics through which it'll be discussed. Yes. Then starting from third canto, then you get into, you know, answering all these major questions. So we see is the questions answered in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam basically make up the whole Bhagavatam, but then that's made more specific by these points, the 10 subjects.
So it's almost like primary and secondary creation, first and second canto.
Yeah, that's what it is. Primary is creation, and secondary is the material manifestation. Okay, you cracked it.
Yes. Then it means that the principles are established in the first two cantos, and all the details.
All the details are given throughout. But that overall, the first dealing with the aspect of the Lord is dealt in the first canto. The second one includes that and gets into more details of how the material world works.
Yeah.
These 10 topics, they give the full description of the secret and the secret of all secrets?
Yes, yes. Everything.
There's nothing outside.
Because it means Bhagavatam, and there's nothing beyond Bhagavatam. Because we see is that when these other literatures are written by the Goswamis, they're actually in pursuance of aspects of Bhagavatam. Like you say, pastimes in the 10th canto. Like nectar devotion is the devotion that's going on between the pure devotees that are described in the 10th canto. And then in other cantos like Prahlad Maharaj. So in other words, what pure devotees are described in Bhagavatam, that nectar devotion describes. So you get the general in the you could say, yeah. So that it includes the whole spectrum of the spiritual world. So sweetness and majesty. Then then there's a sequel to the nectar devotion that describes specifically just the rasa with the gopis. Because nectar devotion describes the whole thing, and it's complete. It's a complete science. But because of the nature of the masculine and feminine principle, it's the complicated aspect, or say the sophistication of it, the refineness of the intensity. Therefore, there's a further book that he describes that level, which we bumped into the summary of in the last 10 chapters of Jivadharma. That, you know, was like, in other words, what was in the first section, the first ocean of nectar devotion, that we were quite comfortable with. When you got into the last three oceans, that was, you know, okay, but pushing it. But when you got into the next one, then it was kind of like, you know, our ball.
Is that Ujvala
Nivala? Ujvala Nivala.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
We also studied the 10 subjects, the first Puranas.
Yes, that was in connection with what makes a Purana.
So that
must have been Jiva Goswami.
Tathasundara.
So he's just describing what are the topics there, but now we'll get into more detail of that. That was just to point out that there's 10 topics and there's 5. So the 5 give the basic outline. So the 5 include the 10, but for that full discussion, you will discuss that so much that you will want to categorize as 10 because it'll be so full. Like we were saying, sthana would include the element of poshana, right? Which is also, and sthana, and that would be part of the primary and secondary creation. Right, so it's already covered in those. And then you have the lifestyle of the devotees that would be covered in manvantara. So it's all there, it's just that when you bring it out here, it becomes a little bit more exact. Does that make sense? So everything's there in all these things.
What sense does it all condense down to one ashraya?
You could say it all, either that or Ishanu Katha. Like that, because if it's discussions about the Lord, His incarnations, then everything's happening because of that. But the point is because we're discussing Krishna as the supreme cause, then that ashraya would have an importance because it's Krishna who's the source of all incarnations. So then, having discussed that aspect of the secret of Ishanu Katha, then the secret of all secrets as then Him as there. Because you could say is that Him as Vishnu is also for those who are Vaikuntha worshippers, then Mahanarayan is the secret of all secrets. Because He's a person. Right? But here is that, then behind that, then there is Krishna. So then that's even more subtle aspect of that secret of all secrets.
Okay. Shloka Anusharana. So many verses. Verses 1-6. Maharaj Pariket glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam. And 7-29, Maharaj Pariket's questions. Verses 1-6. Maharaj Pariket glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam. In verses 1-6, King Pariket asked Sukadeva Goswami how, after hearing from Brahmadev, Narad Muni went on to glorify the transcendental qualities of Krishna. Right? Because the point is you've heard the essence. How did you contemplate that? How did you expand that? How did you explain it?
Does that make sense? Because that's the whole point, is that the Upanishads are the condensed philosophical understanding of the Veda. And then that is you could say, maybe say systematized or by categorized in the Vedanta Sutra. Mm-hmm. So all philosophy is very nicely given there. But then the point is you have to apply that. So the contemplations of that, the application of that, how you apply that in your life, that's what Srimad Bhagavatam gives. That's why it's the natural commentary. Pariksit Maharaj then glorifies Krishna Katha in the process of Shravana, right? So you can see that's why it's important. How did he do that? How did he come across by
that's
that?
That's the aparavidya aspect.
No, not even. It means you could say is how we'll apply it into aparavidya. You could say that, but that will be these so many of these topics will cover that. But but it's just, in other words, we're taking that someone has heard a point in the philosophy, then contemplating that and observing it, you know, in his life, then as it gets real and practicing, that gets realization. Then when he explains that to others, someone may ask, how did you come to this realization? So then you explain the steps you went through, because those steps are what I could use to take the same principle and apply it in my life. That's, you understand? So there's the practical point. He's heard this. Now how did he contemplate this and apply it? Right? Does that make sense? Because based on that, he can explain it.
Maharaj Pariksit asked Sukadeva Goswami about Narad Muni's explanations of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. The king wants to know who Narad blessed by his preaching of this knowledge he received from Brahma. As for himself, Maharaj Pariksit declares that he is most anxious to hear the narrations of the Lord, for they are all auspicious and help one place one's consciousness on Lord Krishna, verses 1 to 3. Right, how he explained it to others, how they were blessed. And so now he wants to hear this. He wants to be blessed now by this. So he wants to know how he came to this, and then he wants to hear the subject matter itself. According to Srila Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur, in verse 3, Pariksit indicates that his objects of attachment, such as kingdom and family, have been given up. Whatever attachment is left for the body, he wishes to give up by concentrating his mind on Krishna. So he's already reduced everything down to one, right? Because that's the principle. We have attachment for all energy. It's all, you know, open season. So we're supposed to, you know, reduce it down to what's within our duties. Right? And then from there we see as we reduce it down to it's just left with just the body. And then we give up that body and surrender to Krishna. So that's what we're trying to do.
This shows his efforts to remember Krishna. In Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 86, Srila Jiva Goswami states that verse 3 proves that King Pariksit's questions were intended to bring replies, describing devotional service and nothing else. Because he's given up whatever is of the world, so there won't be discussions about that. Then we can see his Bhagavatam therefore can't be mundane. Hence, there can be no doubt that all conclusions in Srimad Bhagavatam end in devotional service. So wherever they start, you know, it's like a Kardama Muni as a brahmachari wanting to get married and have children. Right? So then, but it all still ends up in Krishna. So it's starting from Krishna and then ending in Krishna. So that's what Bhagavatam points out. Maharaj Pariksit continues, those who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and take the subject matter seriously will have Krishna manifest in their hearts in a short time. Why? Because Srimad Bhagavatam is the sound incarnation of Krishna. The Lord enters the heart of the self-realized devotee to cleanse the heart of all the dust of material association. Footnote 28. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, but this is not so remarkable, because jnana and yoga can do this also. By mixing, end quote. That's the doubt, right? So Krishna enters the heart and
cleanses the heart of all dust of material association. So you're saying, so, yeah, okay, nice, but it's not so remarkable because Gyan and Yoga can do this also. So then his comment. By mixing a substance in a jar of water, that water alone is purified, but not all the water in rivers or ponds. This contamination also remains in the jar and is not completely destroyed. By shaking the jar, the dirt becomes disturbed again. Gyan and Yoga purify some people, but not all, and even then, not completely. They purify the heart to some degree, it is said. The Atma, constantly afflicted by lust and greed, will not be satisfied by Astanga Yoga and other paths as much as by direct service to Mukunda, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6.35. But Krishna, just by entering, purifies everything with no impurities remaining. That is the meaning of the example.
So Krishna does. It doesn't remain. You put something dirty in the jar, you know, and shake it so that it comes off of the item. So it's purified. And the water, well, you know, you put it down, the water will become purified, so all the dust will settle in the bottom. But it didn't purify everything. Devotional service can purify everyone. Right? Not just the person practicing, but anybody who comes in contact with it. But the point is, Astanga Yoga, unless you practice it, you don't get any benefit. Mm-hmm. Jnana Yoga, if you don't practice it fully, you don't get benefit. But devotional service, even if you don't practice it fully, you just come in contact with it, you get eternal benefit. Mm-hmm. You get purified. Then when you have that faith in Krishna, then he personally removes. That's what he's, that's in the Gita, Chatur Shloki, then he makes that point. Right, that he, like a bee going in and taking nectar, from, he removes all the impurities within the heart of the living entity.
The impurity could be compared to the karma, Sharira, right?
Yeah. So it means it, both. You get rid of the first to go is your general attachment to, you know, things in general, like that. So that'll be there, the detail goes, and then you just, you know, change and switch it to Krishna. Yeah, so if you get rid of the karma, Sharira, then automatically your linga and stula will go away. You want to keep the stula for a while, right? You know, you know, you wouldn't be wanting to be there, you know, doing artik and then suddenly everything starts to, you know, the lord hits the floor and then everyone goes, Hariba! Yeah, that wouldn't be. Yeah, it's not. That's not the process. Okay. A person so purified feels very fully satisfied, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. Verses 4 through 6. Srila Prabhupada explains this analogy in his purport to verse 6. Oh, we're past time. Okay. So we'll hear the explanation.
I won't.
In the afternoon?
Yeah.
Yes, today is
Friday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.